98.7 FM WXDU Durham, and available via podcast on the World Wide Web. This is Shooting the Bull, your weekly survey of what's happening in the Bull City, brought to you by the voices of the Durham blogosphere. The opinions expressed on this program belong to the individuals expressing them and do not necessarily reflect those of WXDU or Duke University. I'm Kevin Davis. Good evening tonight. I'm here from BullCityRising.com.
And I'm Barry Reagan. I publish at dependableerection.blogspot.com. We survey hot topics on the local blogs and traditional media. We'll be weighing in with our thoughts and opinions about the activities in Durham this past week and the upcoming week.
Tonight, we'll open with a few minutes recap of the week that was and the week that will be. We'll then spend the bulk of our half hour with you digging deeper into a particularly newsworthy story, with special guests joining us from time to time here in the studio. And tonight we have a very special guest, Ideal Collins of Uplift East Durham. She'll be on in our second segment tonight to talk about neighborhood organizing in this struggling but reviving part of the Bull City. And we'll also talk quite a bit about the much-debated Alston Avenue widening. As always, if you have any questions or comments for us or our guests tonight, please shoot us an email at shootingthebull@gmail.com. We'll monitor that address throughout the show and take your questions as we have time.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to do that, Kevin.
Hopefully.
Before we turn to our feature story, let's take a look back at the week in Durham. We call this the front page.
And, Barry, I can't think of a better story for the front page than the fact that we're in the middle of a holiday weekend here in Durham. We've got a lot of cookouts happening, picnics and festivities, and we're forgoing ours here in the radio studio tonight. But that means a lot of those events happening in the city parks, too. But, you know, I read a little something on your blog this week that some of your neighbors were getting a little up close and personal with the park over where you live, over near Duke Park, weren't they?
Well, I'm suspicious that the folks who were getting a little too up close and personal were not actually my neighbors. I live in the Duke Park neighborhood, and if you know anything about Durham and you've been to Duke Park, you know it's just a wonderful park. The city installed a state-of-the-art playground, which is just perfect for kids, say, 5 years old up to 11, 12, maybe even 13 years old. And hundreds of them do come to Duke Park on the weekends. And one of the things that the city did is ask people not to drive their cars into the park.
What a shocking idea.
Right, because we have hundreds of kids learning how to ride bikes, roller skates, little scooters and stuff running around the park. And it's been a fairly regular occurrence that we have found people violating the agreement and bringing their cars into the park. And last weekend, just before I came here, to do the show last week, we ran into some folks who were doing just that, and I almost got into a fight. So not to bring their cars there. So I wrote about it, and it's generated a lot of heat on our neighborhood listserv. A lot of people chimed in. It also got picked up by the Durham News yesterday. In the Netcrashers column, and I actually, before we got together to talk about the show tonight, I got a phone call from the Herald Sun, who wanted to talk about it as well. So I imagine there'll be a story about that sometime in the next few days. I do want to say that the city this week has been very responsive.
I like how you said this week, Barry. One of the things in this whole story, we've got a Parks and Rec department. This is a personal pet peeve of mine, right? We've got a Parks and Rec department going through a national accreditation process to say that they're a gold star, four star, everyone gets a grade A Parks and Rec department. If you read Barry's blog over the last two or three years, time after time again, asking Parks and Rec to do difficult things like honor a decade-old agreement, or come back in and open up a community center, an old restroom facility that the neighborhood would like to take off of the city's hands. All the city's been able to do, it seems, is put up a fence around a parking area that's helped to contribute to cars driving into the park. And Barry, I was there yesterday, and I saw the tire tracks right past the bollards. And I was there with my 8-year-old nephew, who's in from out of state, and he had a great time. And I'm just glad he wasn't flattened.
Yeah, it's a shame, and I really hope that we do not find ourselves in a situation, as we often do in Durham, where something serious has to happen before action is taken. We're really trying to be proactive about this, and I think that we're going to be successful with our plans. I've been told, we were talking about the bathhouse and the agreement that the neighborhood is trying to work with the city to actually renovate and restore the bathhouse and turn it into a community center. And I've heard that there's been some progress on that front as far as the lease agreement as far as not having to have the bathhouse rezoned. We will not have to have a site plan. We will not have to redo the parking situation there. We may have Eugene Brown, who was our guest last week, to thank about that. You know, I don't know. But I'll be blogging more about Duke Park in the future at Dependable Erection. So if you're interested in that, you know, stop back in and read what I have to say. Kevin, I do want to switch gears, although we're not completely. You're working on some budget stories. Patrick Baker has submitted a budget to City Council. And what do you think? Where are we going?
You know, it's a tough year for the budget. I mean, it's no secret to anyone out there in Durham or outside of Durham that it's a tough economy, and it's made this year's city budget look particularly dire. We took a look at this over at Bull City Rising this week, and the local papers have taken a look as well. One of the challenges that's come up here is we're seeing a request for a 16.5% increase over the current year's figure in terms of collections from property tax revenues. And because we've gone through a revaluation of property that brought up the property tax base about 30%, typically you see the tax rate fall to what's called a revenue neutral rate, which would bring levels right in line. But the problem is that the city's projecting almost $18 million in a $300-plus million budget that typically comes in from fees, permits, licenses, sales tax, that in an economy where people aren't buying as many things or where not as many new housing and commercial development starts are happening, that you're just not going to see those revenues. So not only are we having to see basically a property tax rise to make up for that, we're also going to see residents hitting about $12 million in aggregate from the new tiered water rate structure as we start to see our water bills rise in the new year to help pay for some of the capital projects.
What do you mean the new fiscal year? Because water bills, I think, I'm not sure if the Chamber of Commerce has been successful in convincing City Council to push it back to January 1, but I think Council is still planning to start the tiered water rates on July 1, right?
Right, right. And like a lot of nonprofits, like universities, for instance, the fiscal year starts on July 1st. Yeah, the really interesting thing in this budget is, although we're seeing this big property tax increase thanks to the decrease in permit and fee revenue, we're really not seeing a lot of new proposed services. The biggest one is this idea of making yard waste pickup free. Right now, only one-third of residents subscribe to that.
I got to take issue with that word there.
You're right.
Yard waste service is not free. Right now, somewhere about 22% of Durham households participate in the voluntary yard waste program and spend an extra $60 a year. I think you have to pay $40 to get your container at the beginning of the year and when you move in, and then it's another $60 a year to participate in the program.
Right.
That fee would be rolled into your property taxes. So everybody would be paying it, and I don't know exactly what the number is. It'll probably be something like, you know, $40 per household.
Well,
we'll go for yard waste.
Yeah, well, what they would see would be about a total $3 million expense from adding that in, and every resident of the city would get it. There'd also be leaf vacuuming, which our friends over in the City of Oaks over in Raleigh have had for some time. But besides
so
that, you're
every city that I've ever lived in.
Shocking that we're running a little behind the times on that one. But besides that, most of the biggest driver of a lot of the new cost, other than capital projects, have been staff members. And, you know, one of the things that's going to get a lot of attention and I think a lot of heat for the city is the fact that they're not proposing any significant increase in police staffing. They are, and this is a pretty smart idea, proposing about $1 million to go towards bonuses and towards pay raises as needed, because Durham is not competitive with other cities in the Triangle for our public safety pay. They're also proposing, and this is actually, I think, one of the best things Pat Baker did in the budget proposal, allowing overhiring, meaning since we know out of 500 sworn officers or 500 employees in the police department, we're always going to have a certain number of folks open with vacancies. Go ahead and overhire your allocated number so we know we have the number we need at all times. So that's smart. But you're going to try and sell this big a tax increase, and you've got 9 new Parks and Rec employees who are probably not monitoring the cars at Duke Park for every new police officer. That is, my friends, what we call a hard sell. And I think that's going to be a hard sell whether you're dealing with good old lefty bloggers like us or you're dealing with more conservatives here in town. It's going to be very interesting to see what changes council has to this proposed budget.
Well, you heard it first here. Kevin Davis is a lefty blogger.
I'll be kicked out of the secret conservative society. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
I'd like to remind you that you're listening to Shooting the Bull on WXDU in Durham. I'd like to bring our guest to the microphone. Ideal Collins is an activist in East Durham and a blogger. She blogs at upliftEastDurham.blogspot.com. Ideal, tell me about your work in East Durham and with Uplift.
Thank you so much for having me on today. Well, Uplift East Durham started about 2.5 or so years ago. Basically, some neighbors started getting together because they just saw that there weren't any neighborhood organizations where they could get together, get to know each other a little better, have fun, and celebrate the great things that are already happening in our neighborhood. And so those are some of the things that we started out in mind with. We wanted to be the good PR engine of East Durham, since that seemed to be something that was missing.
That's terrific, Ideal. And for folks who haven't been familiar with what Uplift East Durham has been doing, among other activities, they had a very successful home tour a couple of months ago to introduce folks to the novel concept that people live in East Durham. And I think that all too often here in Durham and in the mass media, there's a sense that it's not a community, it's not a neighborhood, and you guys were trying to fight that perception. Tell us a little bit about that home tour.
Oh, yeah, that home tour was fantastic. It was in the end of January, and we had folks come over and meet in the homes of fantastic neighbors that I get a chance to enjoy every day of the week, and we just wanted to give them a window into our world that East Durham is a fantastic place with fantastic neighbors, and that these homes are often hidden gems, and that all it takes is a little bit of interest and using some of the connections that we've gotten with contractors and a little know-how in terms of the loan structures, and you're off and running, and you'll be able to have a home that is well worth every effort.
That's fantastic. And we talked about here last week about the Cleveland Holloway home tour, which Barry and I had a chance to go to, and along with hundreds of other folks around Durham. And I think it's terrific to have that exposure for people to see that not only is this a viable option for life here in Durham, but it's an option that many people, everyday citizens here are taking advantage of. I think it's a great thing for the city to see that. Now, in terms of the blog, you actually run the Uplift East Durham blog besides the organization. Tell us a little bit about the mission of the blog and what you've hoped to accomplish with the website.
Well, it actually was an idea from our neighbors getting together with one another. One of the neighbors was a prospective buyer at the time. She was attending the meetings as a way to gauge how stable the neighborhood was and whether or not there was going to be a sustaining community there. So while she was there with us, she said, you know, I did a Google search on East Durham, and there really wasn't much good news out there about you guys. And so we thought that was a pretty easy thing to solve. We had seen that Cleveland Holloway had started their neighborhood blog, and we thought, what a great idea to be able to so publicly celebrate your neighborhood online in a very user-friendly interface. And so that's how we got the idea to start Uplift East Durham's blog.
Right. And you have another home tour coming up in the future, don't
you? Yes, we have another home tour starting on June 8th, and we're going to be adding a yard sale component to that so that folks can have a little fun with all the stuff that we're cleaning out during the summertime.
Are you finding that people are finding your neighborhood through the blog? Is that working out? Are people exploring East Durham because they're finding good news about your part of town?
I get emails from folks all over the country that have Googled and run across it and are interested in lowering their costs of living and are interested in the East Coast, are fascinated by all that Durham has to offer, and are wondering what affordable places they might be able to get into and places with community. So being represented by the blog, having that voice out there for us even when we're asleep and they're just Googling on the other coast, is really nice.
What do you find in your neighborhood? Is there a lot of participation online? I know that in my neighborhood, we have just reached about the 50% threshold of people who are subscribed to our neighborhood listserv.
Wow.
And it's taken 6 years to get to that point. Do you have a lot of folks who do not have online access in your neighborhood?
Between the fact that we have challenges in terms of socioeconomic status and with the elderly who may not be as well read in technology, that is definitely a barrier that we face in our community, but it is definitely a process that we're at the beginning of in terms of getting people to be connected to the neighborhood group. We've started to look at a whole variety of different options, from calls that we can make in phone trees or automatic phone calls, because most people have phones, automatic phone contact with folks where you can pre-record a message, to supplement the blog and some other things so that it wouldn't be as high a cost as doing paper and mailing.
Do you do paper? Do you have a newsletter that you distribute?
No, we don't. We've pretty much relied on the internet, because right now there are no dues that Uplift East Durham collects.
Wow.
Well, and you know, this is obviously, we talk about news and politics, but blogs are kind of a theme on this show, and it's so exciting to see how for free you can get the word out there about what's happening in your neighborhood. And you know, the blog and electronic communications and other blogs here in town have been very instrumental in a project that I know Uplift East Durham has been very active in and has gotten a lot of press for recently, which is this debate over the Alston Avenue widening proposal. And just to give our listeners who aren't familiar with this a quick introduction to this, if you've ever driven on North Carolina State Route 55, which connects from, goodness, Apex and points south all the way down to US 1, then all the way up through South Durham, skirts through RTP, and then heads up past NC Central, up to the Durham Freeway, you know that that's
It heads a little bit further north than the Durham Freeway, Kevin.
Well, yes,
it actually runs
does, but
right behind my house.
That is true. But the current, what I would call a highway portion, which is two lanes in each direction with a center turn lane, a lot of that road's a 50-55 mile an hour speed limit, and it really sets the stage for transportation in that part of South Durham. The proposal has been to do the same widening through much of East Durham, north of the freeway, and expand the existing route with a higher capacity road. And there's been a real amount of debate in the community between whether to try and add pressure to NCDOT politically to include some pedestrian and bicycle oriented features, and to make this a road that would be easier for those who commute by foot or on pedal to use. And that started quite a bit of controversy in the community and in the local papers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, originally, when we found out that Alston Avenue was going to be widened and that the design was being more discussed, members of Uplift East Durham really looked to PAC 1, and they attended that meeting to try to get some of their questions.
And what is PAC 1 exactly?
I'm sorry, Partners Against Crime, since we're in District 1. We attended that meeting, and at that meeting, it became very difficult to get our answers to questions. I don't know if it's because they didn't have answers to the questions or because they felt like the issue had already been discussed and closed, but at any rate, we weren't allowed to discuss it as fully as we'd like, and so a lot of questions came up, and they kept just coming up at meetings.
So you're saying that the folks in PAC 1 were fine with the design of the road, like we see down by NC Central and down by I-40. They didn't see the need to add in those features?
Well, I wasn't at that meeting when they voted, but from what I understand, there's two different versions of the story from what I've gotten in speaking to different members of PAC 1. One is that they were totally fine with the design as it is, and the other is that their vote of confidence was only to say, yes, we should have the NCDOT do the road, and that the details hadn't been discussed at that point.
Let's take a second, if we can, to identify the players in this game. Highway 55 is a North Carolina highway, so the North Carolina Department of Transportation has responsibility for designing and maintaining and doing everything that needs to be done on this road. Within the city of Durham, we have the City of Durham Transportation Department, right, which technically does not have the authority to say we want the design to look like this or that, but has some moral standing and some clout within the City of Durham. And the director of the City of Durham Transportation Department, Mark Aronson, and his team have come out against the design of the road that the NCDOT has proposed. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. Yeah. Also, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development has come forward saying that they do not believe this is going to bring economic revitalization to East Durham, which is something that all the neighbors are working on.
Right, and that's one of the goals of widening Alston Avenue, is
right,
to provide a means for generating new jobs and building the economy in that part of town. Why do you think this design does not do that?
Well, this design doesn't do that because, in speaking to the majority of the businesses on Alston Avenue along the corridor that it's proposed to be widened, I went on foot and spoke to as many of them as were possibly present. And they all said that it's foot traffic that's going to make a difference to them, not the number of cars that whiz by. And they have been very clear about that, resoundingly clear about that. In our area, pedestrian traffic has increased, even as other parts of Durham's driving traffic has increased.
And, Kevin, you had someone comment on your blog today.
Over on Gary Kieber's
blog. On Gary's
blog,
right.
Durham. And you know, this is a tough thing about this argument ideal, which is that I think there's the sense that many of those of us who aren't in your shoes, who don't live in East Durham, but who've been advocating for the need for better sidewalk, better pedestrian capabilities, better bike lanes, eliminating dedicated right turn lanes that widen the road, that all those features are being said by people who have the choice to bike, the choice to walk, and that, you know, it's essentially a slap in the face to a part of the city where many folks walk and bike because that's all they can afford. How, you know, what's the response to that argument? Why does this kind of transportation make sense in the light of comments like that?
Well, I know that when I speak to my neighbors, they want well-rounded access to the things that they need, whether that's the local recreation center, the grocery store, to get to their bus stops. They want well-maintained places that they can walk and bike to so that they can do the things that they need, whether it's for their sake or their children's sake. And so that's a really important aspect of this. It's not elitist at all to want those facilities to be in place so that you can do it. And I've actually seen comments about that, that these arguments are coming from on high to talk to the little people in East Durham. And I'm one of those little people in East Durham, and I want my sidewalks and I want a road that's manageable. And I know we have a lot of elderly, and them getting across, much less seeing across, six lanes of traffic may be kind of difficult, especially at the Anger and Alston intersection.
Right, right. In much of the rest of the country, and indeed, you know, Europe and Asia, cities are being built around walkability. You know, gas is going to hit $4 a gallon this week. Who knows where it's going to be in a year or two? And in the long term, building infrastructure for the next 30 or 40 years that does not take into account non-automobile transportation is just a mistake. I mean, we're looking at, what, $28 million that this road is supposed to cost? Is that the number that I'm hearing?
That's the number I've heard as well.
Yeah. And, you know, if we're going to spend that much money, why not do it right? It's not that much harder to spend that much more.
Making the changes that we're asking for doesn't increase the amount of money that's going to be spent, because we're all actually talking about less pavement, less right-of-way, and hopefully that money that would have paid for all that right-of-way and extra pavement can go into other friendly features, like beautifying the area and making sure that there's more safety for the bikers and pedestrians.
You know, Ideal, I guess one question that comes up, it strikes me that a lot of this debate has been a surprise to many people, because for many people, and for many years, I mean, there was sort of the same set of voices speaking about East Durham. It was, you'd hear them at election time, you'd hear them in front of city council, very passionate people with a clear vision of what direction they want their community to move in. And I think Uplift East Durham is bringing a new voice onto the community, for the community and by the community. Can you speak a little bit to what the reaction's been like, and how is Uplift East Durham trying to work with existing neighborhood groups to accomplish a meaningful change in this part of the city?
Well, I definitely know that sometimes the established groups or the groups that have established community members in them, they may feel like they have a monopoly on the voice of East Durham. What East Durham, Uplift East Durham, has really been successful in doing is blending old and new voices at the table without that sense of distrust or sense of that if you're a newer voice, then you can't have a contribution. Our stance in Uplift East Durham is that if you pay your tax, and if you're living in Durham, in East Durham, there is no reason why you shouldn't sit equally at the table and be able to have your questions and discussion, so that you can feel included and like you own your community.
Right, we're gonna kind of have to bring this conversation to a close fairly quickly. I did want to make the observation that in many neighborhoods, it is an opposition to something, whether it's a zoning or somebody building something that you don't want in your neighborhood that brings the people together. Unfortunately, I mean, you really want to live in a place where people come together for positive reasons, but it's often the case that opposition to something is what brings a neighborhood together. And are you finding this? Are you finding that Alston Avenue is an organizing tool in
East Durham? I'll tell you what. Uplift East Durham existed for years before the Alston Avenue issue ever came up. And
you mean that the local media doesn't pay attention to something unless there's conflict, Ideal? Mm-hmm. I am shocked by this.
Well, Uplift East Durham first hit the papers when we had the home tour. But we had been doing neighborhood cleanups and getting quietly together and having meals together, surveying the neighborhood, and volunteering together as a neighbor concertedly on other government things that were going on, like a banded housing list, and doing all these things quietly behind the scenes. So we've always been pro-neighborhood. We've always been pro-neighbor. And that's been that way for quite a long time. And so that's why we were so prepared when this came along.
All right. Well, once again, our guest tonight has been Ideal Collins from Uplift East Durham. You can read her blog at uplifteastdurham.blogspot.com. Just great to have you on the show, Ideal, and great to see you again.
Thanks so much, right. Barry and Kevin.
All right. Hey, before
thanks for being on with us, Ideal.
Yeah. Before we close tonight, let's take a few minutes to talk about what's coming up this week in the Durham blogosphere. Kevin, you were talking last week about Durham selling water to Chatham County. Good idea, bad idea. What do you think?
The credit here goes to the Herald Sun for a good piece on this. I think this is going to bring up a lot of debate. But in a nutshell, we're talking about, even as we're raising our water rates and going to this multiple tiered structure, selling between 1 million and eventually 5 million gallons of water a day to our neighbors down in Chatham County, all at the low tier one rate. And I know there's been some opposition to this. I'll bring this up on my blog in the next couple of days. But you know, we're really in an interesting situation here, because as much conservation as we do, as much water re-rating as we do, at the end of the day, as the population grows through whether it's in-migration, which is controversial, or birth, which is not that controversial.
Can't do much about that.
We're going to need more water. And the nearest best source of water is in Jordan Lake, which borders Chatham County, and it's going to cost us $50 million to get there. And we need partners. And frankly, if we don't play nicely with Chatham now and maybe make a little bit of a sacrifice now, we're going to have a really expensive time getting ourselves a second intake into Jordan Lake. So,
and not just expensive, but politically, if Chatham County is supporting Durham, I don't know if they're willing to contribute to the capital expense of building the other intake, but politically, I mean, we've already seen some opposition coming from voices, in Orange County about building more intakes in Jordan Lake, and that may be a factor. It may not be a factor. I know Kevin doesn't think that the mayor of Carrboro is going to have a whole lot to say about that, and I don't disagree with him. I just don't know. I don't know where this is going to be. But the more friends we have when it comes to being able to tap more water out of Jordan Lake,
absolutely,
the better off we're going to be.
That's the key. So we'll talk about that on the blog this week. And you know, I think this notion of what kind of community we want to be, what kind of housing stock we want, maybe make an interesting future program. We could probably spend five half hours on that.
I'm thinking at least five and 2 months worth of blogging.
Absolutely. Well, Barry, speaking of things coming up on the blogs this week, if we look back at last week's show, you made a reference to this mysterious lawsuit in our interview with Don Moffitt and Eugene Brown, Durham v. Graham.
I wasn't trying to play stump the guests, but I did. Neither of them apparently had heard about this.
And I hadn't either. And
I've
I guess
done some,
you've been
done
doing
some
the
research.
Legal digging
I've done some
for
research.
Us, huh?
I'll be writing about it on the blog this week. If you go back in the Independent Weekly Archives about 2 years, I believe it's April of 2006, you'll find a pretty long story by Jennifer Strom about this case. Mr. Graham owns several parcels of land in Durham, and some of them were being used apparently or allegedly for illegal dumping. There was lots of
illegal dumping in Durham, Barry?
Go figure. There was lots of sedimentation, erosion, topsoil, poisons, etc., being run off with stormwater into our streams. This was not a rezoning or redevelopment issue, but planning department does have jurisdiction if a piece of land is being used for dumping in violation of current zoning. And apparently Mr. Graham had a number of fines levied against him, ranging up to, I believe, $300,000 worth of fines. It's been in court for the last 2 years. He apparently has won his latest appeal, and now the county has to decide whether they're going to take this case a little bit further. So I'll be writing about that at Dependable Erection this week. You know, we've got one last thing I think to say before we go, and that is we have a rock star.
We have a rock star. You know, we've always known that Gary Kieber over at the Endangered Durham blog had a lot of indie cred, but he got indie cred with a capital I this week, as he wasn't just featured in an article by the Independent Weekly, but actually made their cover, which is, I think, a first for the Durham blogosphere, isn't it?
As far as I know, Gary has been interviewed, and he's appeared in the indie before, but he was the cover boy this week. And you know, I hope it's not going to his head. I was sitting at Toast the other day, having an enjoyable meal, waiting for the premiere of the Indiana Jones movie, and Gary walked by on the other side of Five Points. And I yelled out, "Can I get an autograph?" And he just kept on walking. So, anyway.
Barry, I think that Gary's becoming one of the big people now, and us little people have to start standing in line for the autographs.
Bless his heart. I love him. Just want to remind you, the name of the show is Shooting the Bull. I'm Barry Reagan.
Barry, I'm Kevin Davis with BullCityRising.com. You can find Barry over at DependableErection.blogspot.com.
This is WXDU Durham, 88.7 FM, and we're going to turn the show back over to whoever comes next. We'll see you next week, folks.